Welcome to Close Up. I'm Kelly Carter, and I'm going to go ahead and start this episode with a prediction. Corey Hawkins will one day be one of the most recognizable actors in Hollywood. I'm talking Will Smith, Matt Damon status. And I feel like I've been talking this man up so much this week in particular that my voice is a little hoarse now. But here's the thing. You have actually seen Corey's work, even if you don't think you've seen his work.
Yo, Trey.
What up?
I got something to say.
We first really met him in 2015 and Straight Outta Compton, that NWA biopic where he expertly brought a young Dr. Dre to life.
The police coming straight from the underground.
And honestly, that film forced this industry to see the power of Black casts, Black directors, and Black storytellers. And in terms of the box office, it earned more than $200 million worldwide, which made it the highest grossing music biopic of all time until 3 years later when Bohemian Rhapsody, that's the Queen biopic, came along and took that crown. But you know what? Let's stay on task because we're here to talk about Corey Hawkins.
Our lips are thick.
Yes, they are.
Our nose is broad. Our hair is nappy. We are Black and we are beautiful.
Corey's done a lot of work since Compton. He did Spike Lee's Black Klansman, which won Spike an Oscar. And he did In the Heights, where he showed us he had some pipes. That man can sing.
We're gonna brag and say we knew.
And it was recently announced that he would be playing the cruel, ornery Mister in the Color Purple reboot. Given all of that, and the fact that Corey has some solid training from Juilliard, and when he was there, he won the John Houseman Award for Classical Theater, I'm honestly not surprised at where he's finding himself professionally right now.
Double, double, toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble.
He's giving us a pitch-perfect Macduff in the latest film adaptation of The Tragedy of Macbeth. In that film, Corey is acting alongside Oscar winners Denzel Washington and Frances McDormand, and he's directed by Joel Coen of the legendary and award-winning Coen brothers. It is impossible to be around that level of greatness and not find yourself be great too. As we always do on Close Up, after my conversation with Corey Hawkins, you'll go inside my group chat with a few of my buddies. Today, I've got the president of the African American Film Critics Association, Gil Robertson, and I have our own ABC News radio entertainment correspondent, Jason Nathanson, with me. We'll talk about what earned Corey that AFCA Award for Best Supporting Actor, what the new Batman means for theatergoers, and we'll talk about some of our favorite series hitting the small screens. But first, here's my conversation with Corey Hawkins. Corey, I want to go back because we first met as the world was about to meet you as Dr. Dre and Straight Outta Compton. Take me back a few years. What were you hoping would immediately come your way in the aftermath of such a successful project and debut?
Well, I guess my hopes and my dreams have sort of come to fruition. I sort of feel like I'm in process at this point and still living out in terms of immediate goals. I mean, I count myself really lucky. It's really hard to sort of persist and pursue this craft. And then not only to do that, but just to do it with, cast and directors and people who I enjoy doing it with and working on projects that actually say something. I mean, Compton, you know, as you remember, like that was, it sort of caught the world by storm and it sort of hit the zeitgeist in a beautiful way.
Cruising down the street in my 6'4".
Oh, shit. Hey, that was dope, eh?
And just sort of started us talking, not only about what we were talking about in the film and everything that NWA was talking about, but what we were talking about on the film side and what the world looks like in terms of creating and a film led by Black actors with a Black director, Black producers, what that looks like in this space and that there is space for us. So it was cool being a part of that. And now I feel like I'm just, you know, sort of stepping forward in that way.
I'll say. But before we get into, you know, kind of this really big moment that I think you're finding yourself in right now, even after the major success of Straight Outta Compton, I noticed that you not only took roles in television, but you at some point went back to the stage. Why was that? And what was it that you were getting from television and even more specifically the theater that maybe you weren't finding or couldn't find in film?
Well, I honestly think creatively, it was just an opportunity to go back and continue stretching the muscle. And Denzel talks about this all the time, but like going back to the theater, and that's something that he does in his career. And a lot of the actors that I respect, not just him, it's just about going back and flexing the muscle. And I came up in the theater. And so you start to miss it after a while. You know, it doesn't necessarily pay all the bills in theater, but you do it because night after night, you get to go in there and tell it. It might be the same story, but you're talking to a different audience. And I'm always of the mind that if there's one person in that audience who connects to that story, then you sort of exponentially change somebody's life. And I feel like not to put too much weight on it, but I had done Broadway before Straight Outta Compton, but I went back and did 6 Degrees of Separation after doing 24 on television. It was a real departure, but I also felt like creatively, coming off of 24 and maybe creative voice that I wish I had had more of on the show. I was able to sort of go back and dig in and go back to what I knew and a creative process that I understood. And I hope to just continue doing that. You know what I mean, Kelly? I feel like it for me feeds the other, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And in a lot of ways, it's a nice culmination, I think, with what you're able to do in Macbeth. How did that project come to you?
I wish you could say it just came to me, but didn't slide across the desk. I had to fight for that one. And that's also part of it. I love being able to chase projects and the opportunity to audition. I mean, I was overseas at the time. I was in think Latvia. So I don't know where I was. Or maybe I was in, like, I was shooting a film and in the middle of nowhere. And they were like, yeah, Joel's going to be in town in 2 days in LA. Joel Cohen. And he's seeing everybody, you know. I was like, wait, what? Like, but I'm shooting in Hama. So I flew back. We didn't tell him that I was like out of town or anything like that. I showed up and it almost became a 2-day process. I think I had to literally fly back the next day. So I lied. And I was just like, you know, we were reading different roles. And I was just like, he was like, well, you can come back tomorrow and maybe read, you know, or if you want to take some time with this or the other. I was like, no, I got you. I can do it now. Cause I had been exposed to, you know, that thing of stay ready. So you don't have to get ready. I've been exposed to Macbeth. I did it at school and training. And so, and had the opportunity to play Macbeth. And so it all sort of became kismet. And for me, I know Macduff, that character, you know, there's many different ways you can play it. But for me, I just wanted to get inside it in a different way. And so I just used the read with Joel as a way to just play and do something different that was unexpected, not just to him, but to myself, you know. And so, and we kind of found magic working it that way.
You know, what does it mean to fight for a role? And when do you know when a role is worth fighting for?
I think you, first of all, it's the script. If it isn't on the page, it isn't on the stage. And I, you know, there's been a lot of things that I've passed on that opportunity because the script wasn't there quite yet, or the character wasn't where I think it should be in terms of, you know, it's not about the breadth or quote unquote size of the role. It's just, you know, if the character offers something and has something to say, and not to get too precious with it, but that's what I'm looking for first and foremost. And again, for me, in quote unquote fighting for a role, it's really more so, you know, y'all have the opportunity to see just a glimpse of what I am going to sort of, you know, I'm just scratching the surface here in this audition, you know, with what I could bring to it, where we could go, the possibility, imagine, you know. And then you're getting the opportunity as an actor to to see if you like working with this director, you know. Mm-hmm. That's how I look at it. You know, it's never a burden. If someone wants to read, you know, read me in a room, I'm all for it, because that's an opportunity to see what the collaboration is going to be. And that's what it was with Joel Cohen. I mean, I literally have inhaled all of his films, him and his brother's films, and was a fan. And so in the room, it was a collaboration that I was just looking forward to, like just the ease with which he was. And I've gotten to work with some really a broad range of like really incredible directors. And so to add him to the list was really dope. I was like, I'm gonna fight for it, you know, whatever that means. I'm gonna go hard so I can have the opportunity to bring my version of what I imagine, you know, MacDuff, where he lives.
You brought it and then some, because your scenes with Denzel Washington just left me awestruck.
I will not fight with thee.
Then yield thee, coward.
I will not yield. Kiss the ground before young Malcolm's feet and to be baited with a rabble's curse.
There was a moment where you guys were just going at it, and I realized that I hadn't drawn a breath.
Leon MacDuff, and damn be him that first cries old enough.
Do you remember the first time you worked through a scene with him, and what was that like?
First of all, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, it's and I feel like the first time I was I came for a costume fitting, and Denzel and Francis had been in rehearsal for a while, and I came for a costume fitting with Mary Zofres, who's incredible. The conversations that we were able to have just about the costumes and what they say and how, you know, what this material does. It's fascinating, really fascinating. She's been working with Joel for a long time. But anyways, I was there with her and we were kicking it and talking about costumes. And then they called over. They were like, oh, he's on the lot. Come over and say what's up, because everybody's here rehearsing. So I was like, cool, headed over there and said what's up. And I'd known Denzel before out of the context of working together. You know, Denzel, after we exchanged pleasantries and all that, we got to work. He just picked up a book and then we started going with the text. And, you know, thankfully I was ready. But, you know, and from that day on, I came to rehearsal every day. And at first it was just me reading everybody else's sort of roles and all of that. And then people started trickling in and working with Denzel, you know. There's a reason why we call him treasured among artists, is because there is an art to what he does. And the word craft, you know, people say what they want about it, but there's a discipline that he has. And it's a discipline that I pride myself in trying to sort of just scratch it. It just, you know, watching him coming in every day before everyone else, last to leave, you know what I mean? And just being able to talk process and watch him first and foremost, up close and personal, was dope. And it's something that I am looking forward to add into my toolbox, you know what I mean? Just the opportunities, those scenes, being able to watch the ease with which he works in a film that has so much angst. And so it's such a thriller, but to watch him make it his, you know, it gave me the confidence to be able to make MacDuff mine. That was fascinating.
But you know what's so great, and I hope that you know this about yourself and what you turned in performance-wise, is that you don't get lost in that scene at all. Like, you're right there with him, which to me was so exciting, you know, to watch, because not many can hang with Denzel Washington, but you hang and then some with Denzel Washington. And to me, this really felt like every Juilliard alum's dream, you know, that you get to go toe to toe with one of the greatest actors of all time in a highly charged scene, or in several highly charged scenes, in a piece of literature that has been beloved and studied for centuries. Mm. Was it this your greatest dreams realized to have this moment?
It was. I mean, you know, I'd be lying if I said anything other. I mean, it was just, and not only that, not only everything that you just said, but then to be directed by a Cohen, like literally Joel Cohen in his mind, his mastery, and then to have the cinematographer there every day, like watching and pulling from their minds, like literally being a fly on the wall in the room where it was happening, being able to watch, you know, the moments when things didn't work, and then the moments when, you know, it was just the music was singing and we were up there literally playing different instruments and everybody's in this beautiful sort of symphony. I was just like, I'm literally the luckiest guy in the world. And I better have my stuff together. I better come correct. There's no lateness. There's no, you know, not knowing the text and being ready. You just got to be ready and come with ideas. And that was just, it was dope.
What does it take for you to say yes at this point in your career?
Well, a few zero. No, I'm joking. No. I honestly, I've always been like this, and it's much to like sometimes my reps chagrin, you know, dismay. But I've always no is our biggest weapon. It's our power. And sometimes you have to say no to a certain thing because something doesn't feel right. Or, you know, for me, it was all about what are we saying with the work? You know what I mean? And sometimes, look, if we want to go and do, you know, I remember doing Six Underground, and that was just an opportunity to just, you know, do something that was wild and different.
Come on. Say peekaboo, you punk.
And again, escapism and just to sort of change the, you know, just counter program a little bit for myself, you know, but the opportunity to say when you finally get to say yes to something, it means a lot and it holds a lot of weight. But you also can't be too precious about certain things. I remember I was like having conversations with my friends and they were like, yo, like sometimes you have to just do it. You know, it's a long career. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. So if you think about life that way, if you just, you know, if you say yes to the right things and it doesn't go the way you want it to go, or the response isn't that, you can always pick yourself back up and get on that chain, get on that wagon and keep pushing. But in order to say yes, my heart just has to be in it. You know, I might have doubts. I might be nervous, but you can be nervous and still work. You can be nervous and still go 150%. Which sometimes we have to do just on off the humble, like, you know, so I just, I don't know. It's that magic, you know, it's that instinct too. I think, you know, it's right now, it's just about developing my taste, developing the, you know, but I gotta say, after working with Joel Cohen, Denzel Washington, Frances McDormand, I mean, I'm like, what like it's hard. I'm just like, I don't know what else. It's the goal is to continue working with creators like that, you know, on projects.
Yeah, that's definitely raised the bar. I would say so. It's like, who, you know, fresher than Denzel, Frances McDormand, and so on and so on and so on. Like, come on.
You know, it's just the opportunity to, that's why, again, I pinch myself. I'm very blessed. I'm a spiritual person. So I do believe everything is going to happen the way it's supposed to happen and ordained in some way. But I also, you know, you have to be conscious in the projects and the roles that we take, because I'm conscious of without being precious. You know, it doesn't mean I have to play the most moral person or this or that. You know, it doesn't mean, you know, Denzel's playing Macbeth. He's exposing those qualities in somebody who is ruthless and a murderer, and what got him to that place and where he's come. You know, those are the intricacies that we're dealing with in the psychology that we're trying to work out as actors and artists. And it's our responsibility to do just tell the truth in that way. And then we let it go. You know, it's up to everybody else to write about it and pontificate about, you know, what you're doing in it. But at the end of the day, that's where I'm at with it. You know,
One of the things that I love about Macbeth that feels so important to acknowledge is that it looks like the world that we actually live in. And quite frankly, it looks like how the world existed back when Shakespeare wrote it, you know? But every time we normally see those types of works performed, it looks very homogenous, but not this film. And I would love to hear you talk a little bit about that, because it's very noticeable. And I love when things like that are noticeable without explanation. And that's what you guys gave us with this.
Thank you. Well, like I said, we do the work, you know, we show up. I'm a black man. I look the way I look, you know, curly hair. I love it. You know what I mean? Nappy roots. I love it. You know what I'm saying? I show up in on set, and it's an opportunity for me to step into that role. I am who I am. I can't change that. And so the opportunity to step into Shakespeare, and what this does is it allows me to find a new way into it. It's like, what is your way into it? For me, it's the poetry of it all, in the same way that we listen to hip hop and different forms of music, and not, you know, you may not understand it all, but you catch this and you catch that, and the image ultimately forms into something that makes sense and that actually talks about where we are in society. And sometimes the simple act, the subversive act, and Francis talks about that a lot, but like the simple act of us getting in a room and doing it together is says something, and it says enough that we don't have to go and qualify it. Like, I don't feel the need to get on and be like, well, yes, I'm black and this is why I'm, you know, I mean, it is what it is. I do the work. I'm lucky in that I've trained so that, and everyone in this cast is trained, and not just, you know, black and white. We're from everywhere. I mean, the Scottish actors, the British, there's South, like every part of the globe, you know, and it allows us to say we have ownership over this just as much as anyone else. We can, my understanding of this thing that Shakespeare is just as dope and funky and fresh as any other dusty, you know, pontification over what Shakespeare is from anyone. Like, I feel like we have had an opportunity and have this opportunity, and I feel like the movie does this, is that you don't question it. You really are watching this like thriller. It's like one of these films that you just sort of go, like you say, you sort of like holding your breath because you're like, oh, you know, you sort of get on the ride and you go. And mm-hmm. I just dig that. Like, you're not sitting there going, you know, you might miss a word, or you might miss this, or you might not understand it because it's Shakespeare or whatever, but you get it, you know. And that's the that's just what we're after, I think. You know, to be able to stand up there, and also for a young generation of men and women who look like us to look at that screen and go, whoa, what are they saying? What are they talking about? Wait, well, okay. And get curious and know that is possible, to see one of their greatest, you know, the greatest actors of our generation up there on that screen doing something like that it speaks volumes, because I haven't seen this growing up.
And you know what's crazy about that is I don't think I have ever met an actor, period, but most certainly an actor who has the type of training that you have, you know, and the type of programs that you went through, who hasn't done Shakespeare at some point in their career. So I would love to hear, you know, what was young Corey like when he was performing Macbeth or whatever Shakespeare play you inevitably had to perform when you were in school, and what were his aspirations, and what would you love to go back and tell him now that you have done Shakespeare, but not only done Shakespeare, you've done him on a global stage and with, you know, at least two of the greatest working actors right now.
I to be honest, if I told him something different, his path might not end up where I ended up. If I tried to correct the mistakes that young Corey made, I don't know if I would be sitting here, you know, talking to you, Kelly. So like, I feel very lucky in that I was able to work on things that, you know, and approach things and be scared about it and be nervous. And I'm now mentoring some students who are coming up through my old high school and through from Juilliard as well. And, you know, they're like, well, where are we advice? And I'm like, sometimes the best advice is just you know, trusting being where you are and just trusting that this journey, whatever you choose, it is going to lead you exactly where you were supposed to be. Like that's the, I mean, it's really simple. It sounds scary because it's like, you know, I remember being in high school thinking my world was going to be over because, you know, I don't know, this girl broke up with me or my homework wasn't this and it that wasn't, it, you know what I mean? Like we're going to continue to have that for the rest of our lives. Like, and so you have to be easy with yourself. You have to, and so maybe that's what I would tell myself is just to relax and just trust the process, trust that what you're doing is, and that you are enough, you know? That's what I would say. You are enough, because sometimes you walk into a room full of people who don't look like you, and you feel like you have to be something other than who you are. And you might not know who you are just yet, but be where you are, fully present, and just make mistakes, take risks, and continue to fail upwards. You know, like it's okay to fail. It's okay to mess up and get messy. And I'm proud of myself on that now. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, that wasn't it. You know, so like, what's next? You know, that's the thing. I love being the underdog too. You know, I think there's something about that quality that can drive you. You know, if so, I'd say that.
Well, look, that advice has served you quite well. And then some, Corey Hawkins, thank you so much for doing this today. I really appreciate you.
Solid advice indeed. After the break, a couple of my Hollywood Reporter friends are going to talk some more Corey Hawkins and Tragedy of Macbeth with me. Plus, we get into some Hollywood news and new TV shows that we're absolutely hooked on. Okay, we're back. I want to bring in my friends, ABC News entertainment correspondent Jason Nathanson and the co-founder and president of the African American Film Critics Association, or AFCA, as we like to call it, Gil Robertson. Welcome, Jason and Gil.
Good morning, Gil.
You know, I want to talk about Macbeth because personally, that was actually my favorite film of this season. But I want to hear your thoughts about Corey's performance in it. And also, I want to talk about the new iteration of Batman and its impact at the box office, plus a couple of TV shows that we think are worth everyone's time. But let's start with Corey. What did you guys think about his performance?
I thought he was, I mean, incredible. You know, obviously, he received our AFCA's Best Supporting Actor Award for his performance in the film. And I thought he held up well against, you know, Denzel and Francis. Everything about it was thumbs up for me.
What about yourself, Jason?
Yeah, I really liked it. And I liked hearing in the interview him talking about how he went toe-to-toe with Denzel and how all the preparation that went in his life from, you know, his early stuff to Juilliard to everything got him to that moment. You can tell when somebody hasn't done Shakespeare before or doesn't have a familiarity with the classics. Yeah. And they put their own interpretation on it. That's great. And that's cool. But when somebody's classically trained like that, and he's with some of the best actors, you know, running right now, you can tell. And it's fantastic.
My wife killed too.
I have said,
be comforted.
Sinful Macduff. They were all struck for thee, not that I am, not for their own demerits, but for mine. Fell slaughter on their souls. Heaven rest them now.
Yeah, you know, Gil, I kind of want to kick it back over to you, too, because Corey really did pick up his first major award in this category and for this film. Why was this the film that AFCA wanted to honor him?
You know, what Corey, this performance was sort of like a combination of what we've seen coming for a minute. Coming out of Straight Out of Compton, one would have necessarily thought that his career would have gone this way. But he has slowly and steady built a filmography that is quite impressive and quite varied. So for us, I think it's really just the beginning of a long, long courtship that we're going to have with him, you know, and celebrating and recognizing him as one of the new talents to watch.
Yeah. One thing that we're starting to see, I think, and I hope I'm not being too premature about this, but the box office is back?
Bruce Wayne.
The Batman released recently.
Justice. The answer's justice.
It came in on its opening weekend an estimated $128.5 million in the North American box office alone, which is far past that $100 million it was expected to bring in. Is that telling us that people are far more comfortable now with going back to the theater? And thusly, does that get us back to the top of 2020 where we were? Jason, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're definitely seeing that people are more comfortable going into spaces. We've seen around the country a lot of mask mandates dropped, and that was a barrier, I think, for a lot of people. Mm. We also saw, you know, this is the first big blockbuster so far of the year. We saw really good returns for Spider-Man. It's those properties that people know and that people love, that they gravitate towards, they get back. But if you look at the rest of the box office for March, there are four films opening wide this month, including Batman. So if people are excited for Batman, there's not a lot for them to then go follow up that film with. So we'll see. But now Batman has a lot of room to make a lot of money in the next couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things which we'll actually probably never know about the box office from this weekend, but I'd be really interested to see the breakout, is AMC introduced variable pricing, which had them change the prices for movies like The Batman or Spider-Man. So Batman, for instance, in Los Angeles, a ticket was $25 on Friday night.
Wow.
You know, if the average ticket price is usually around $9 across the country. So if this is almost three times that, that had to have made a big difference at the box office. Unfortunately, we'll never get the breakout of that. But I think it's interesting to see if going forward, if that has any kind of effect, and if other theaters change their pricing as well.
Does that come with like a glass of wine?
That's the thing. You're not even getting anything extra. You're just getting your typical movie seat. It's crazy. But for those first run big movies, people are going
to
pay it.
That's true, though. I'm going to need some Raisinets to go with that $25 price ticket, I think. But now I'm going to pivot, because I want to ask you both a very controversial question. The Dark Knight, The Batman, or my personal favorite, the OG Michael Keaton?
What are you?
I'm Batman.
Which one is the best so far? Jason, I know you're smiling. What's your pick?
Wow, it's just so tough. I'm going to have to go with Dark Knight. And I can't even exactly tell you why. I think really for me, it's more about Heath Ledger and the Joker than it is about anything else.
See, madness, as you know, is like gravity. All it takes is a little push.
But that was the series that gave us him. That was such a great performance. So I got to go with Dark Knight.
All right. Gil, what about yourself? The Batman, The Dark Knight, or my favorite, Michael Keaton as the OG, because you have that Jack Nicholson versus Michael Keaton comical greatness. What are your thoughts? Which one wins?
You know, I'm going to go with The Dark Knight as well. I mean, there was something just about Christian Bale's performance of Batman that really, I thought, revealed the angst behind, Batman's character.
Yeah.
You know, and the performances overall in that film were just, across the board, were just excellent.
You know, I can't believe nobody is backing me up on Michael Keaton. Guys, who are you? That's what's happening here.
You didn't even give an option of George Clooney and the bat nipples.
Did I not give that option? I wonder why I did not give that as an option. Listen, there's Michael Keaton and everybody else. That's how, those are the rules. I don't make them.
Sure.
Those are the rules.
Your show, your rules. I got it.
Yeah.
He's a close second.
I'm kidding. There's room for plenty of Batmans and apparently plenty of Jokers. If you portray the Joker, you win an Oscar. So that's all I'm saying as they think about this next, what this next The Batman sequel might look like. Want to jump over to some really big entertainment news that I find to be wholly intriguing. Will Smith and Michael B. Jordan are teaming up for I Am Legend. It's the first time they're going to act together, but they also are co-producing it. Why I find this to be really interesting is that Michael B. Jordan, for the bulk of his career, especially as he really got into some of those roles later in his life, has always had to talk about, is he the second coming of Will Smith or Denzel Washington? And I feel like his answer has kind of been like, I want to be both. And now, after being directed by Denzel, we get to see him starring and working alongside Will Smith. What do you guys think about that, Jason?
I can't wait. I loved I Am Legend. It is quietly, I think it probably doesn't get the praise it deserves, although everybody, whenever you bring it up, everybody's like, oh yeah, I love that movie, but it's not one that's often talked about. So I love it. I can't wait to see where they would go with the second.
How did you get out of here? Brad, if you're real, you better tell me right now. If you're real, you better tell me right now.
I'm almost a little nervous because I did like the first one so much and I never want to see them mess anything up and mess up the legacy of something. But with these two guys, especially, I can't wait to see them together.
I also really love that they're both producing it too. You know, I talked a little bit with Will Smith about producing King Richard and why that was important to him, because he doesn't always produce the work that he stars in. And I feel like moving forward, this is probably what we're going to see for the rest of his career. What is it about actors that understand their power as producers and people who are working behind the scenes? How do you guys think that really changes the output for them? Like, what does that do?
Well, yeah. I mean, certainly as a producer, we'll have a lot more control over, you know, the character and how it's developed, how it, you know, the final cut. It's important for him to, I think, control the image, control the story, control as much of the IP as possible so that he can make his best efforts to ensure the best possible outcome.
No, that's such a great point. And now that Mike has been directed by Denzel, of course, in A Journal for Jordan, we got to see them act alongside one another. Maybe that'll come in the near future. Before I let you guys get out of here, want to hear what you're watching. I'm in love with Pam and Tommy on Hulu. It is making me rethink everything I think I thought about that scandal. It makes me want to reach out to Pam, apologize to her on behalf of all of society, and maybe be her good girlfriend.
No, you don't understand. I'm done. Pam. I will not answer another question.
Pam, listen, I'm trying to make this work.
You make that happen, or I get a new lawyer.
I think it's well acted, well written, well executed. And I think if the point is to repaint Pam, that job has been completed. What about yourself? What are you watching, Jason?
I love Pam and Tommy. And I think you bring up a great point there about how it reframes what we knew and our own complicity in it. And it, when it comes to either whether you're laughing at the late night talk show jokes,
yeah,
or whether you watch the tape yourself, you know, you were part of the problem. And I think that shines a light on it.
Yep.
And so I the series does a great job. Sebastian Stan and Lily James, I think, are great. There's a show on Apple TV Plus, which just started, Severance, which I think is fantastic. It is a slow burn.
Hello, my name is Mark S. And I have, of my own free accord, elected to undergo the procedure known as severance.
By the time you get to the end, like, it had an actual jaw-dropping moment for me. Winning Time, which just started on Sunday on HBO.
So good. So good. Oh, my God. I'm obsessed with this series.
It's so fantastic, and it's from Adam McKay. And, I mean, John C. Reilly as Jerry Buss is fantastic. Quincy Isaiah as Magic Johnson in his first role, and he's going head-to-head
first
with
role.
All those guys.
First pick, 1979 NBA draft. Los Angeles Lakers select Irvin Magic Johnson.
I mean, just all the actors in there, and, you know, the tallest cast, I think, of any TV show that's ever been made.
There were no lies told about that. Yes, so good. Chef's kiss. Every last episode, you will go down a rabbit hole trying to read and learn more about that series, which I think is the marker and measure of a really, really, really excellent job done. Gil, what about yourself? What are you watching?
My must watch every week has been The Gilded Age, which is just, I mean, it's great television.
Revolutions are launched by clever people with strong views and excess energy.
You know, but anytime you can see Christine Baranski, you know, do her thing, it's always a good time.
Yeah, yeah. I really want to thank Jason and Gil for doing this. You guys are amazing, and I just really appreciate your time.
Hey, my pleasure. It was fun.
Thank you.
Next time on Close Up, legendary screenwriter and director Aaron Sorkin says once he starts writing, it's really hard to stop.
for me, a screenplay isn't finished, it's confiscated. I keep writing until someone says, pencils down. We've got to go. We've got to roll film.
That's next time on Close Up. You know what? Thank you guys for kicking it with me these last few episodes. I really hope you like what you've been hearing and learning. And if you do, please rate and review the show and follow wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss any future episodes. Close Up is a production of ABC Audio. It's produced by Vika Aronson, Carrie Ann Thomas, and David Toledo, with help from Josh Cohan, Brenda Salinas Baker, Ariel Chester, Mary Pat Thompson, Elizabeth Russo, and Stacia Dashishku. Lakia Brown is our senior producer, and Liz Alessi is our executive producer. Talk soon!